Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elf.
And I'm Ken Rudin, and I'm back.
And you are back, and Ken, welcome back.
Thank you.
It is so good to have you back.
Unfortunately, nothing has happened in the week since I've last appeared on
this
podcast.
It's been quiet. It's been remarkably quiet.
Not much has happened.
And yet, we are going to observe a couple of things. It's good to have you back in town because others are leaving. A major resignation, a major departure this week in Washington. What are we going to do without listening to this voice?
The ayes have it.
And that, of course, the immortal intonation of Dennis Hastert, the man who served longer as the Speaker of the House of Representatives than any other Republican in history.
And yet, that's true. He served longer than anybody else.
And this week he announced he is not going to serve past this term. He's going to return to his home in the suburbs of Chicago.
He may even actually resign even before that. There's a possibility of him not even serving to the end of 2008. But, you know, you think of him, the longest serving, as you say, longest serving Republican Speaker in history, and yet not a dynamic guy, not somebody whose leadership, I think, made a difference.
Not a household word?
No, well, not so much that, but you think of Gingrich, whatever you think of Newt Gingrich or Tip O'Neill.
Nicholas
Speaker's
Longworth or Sam Rayburn.
Yeah.
The greats. Joe Cannon.
Kevin Close.
Was a guy. Yeah. These were the people who led us.
Right.
But Dennis Hastert?
See, that's the problem. Here's the problem.
But he served longer in the job than anyone else, much longer than Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich only served from 94 to 98, 4 years. Do we want to go through a little history of how Dennis Hastert became Speaker of the House?
Well, we'd have to talk about Tom DeLay.
Well, we first talk about Newt Gingrich resigning after the 98 elections because he...
Disappointing for the Republicans, lost a few seats.
And then Bob Livingston, I presume, was going to be the next... I presume, get it?
From Louisiana.
The right house by you. Mm-hmm. And he was going to be the next speaker, but he was outed in a sex scandal as the Republicans were impeaching Bill Clinton.
It was a heterosexual sex scandal, though. I think we need to say that. If you're going to say outed, I think we need to say heterosexual
sex scandal.
And he is, of course, one of the people who served the very shortest time as the leader of the Republicans.
Right, because he's not at all. And then it would have been Tom DeLay, but Tom DeLay being so toxic that he decided to pick his chief deputy.
I mean, I think he wanted to spend more time with his family.
With Bob Livingston's family, because obviously Bob wasn't.
With Tom DeLay.
No, but so then you're left with Dennis Hastert, who was non-controversial. Nobody hated him. As a matter of fact,
he had no enemies.
No, he had no enemies.
Not at least on the Republican side.
But even on the Democratic side, I think he was just, you know, a nice, cuddly, former wrestling coach, grandfatherly type.
He's a little on the huge side to be cuddly, is he not, Ken? Very large man.
Well, yes, true.
At any rate, he did serve for all those years, right up to last fall, as the leader of the Republicans in the House after 1998.
When he did not distinguish himself in 2006, given the Mark Foley scandal, which, you know, he kind of like, well, I didn't know about
it. He booted it.
Yep.
He didn't handle it well. Nope. So a tough ending for Denny Hastert, and now he goes out on kind of a sour note.
Yes, but I would make the case that it's not a surprise at all. I think, you know, as you well know, that Joe Martin was the last speaker, former speaker, to lose his speakership and then stay in Congress.
Back in the 1950s.
That's right, exactly. So it's been a long, long time since that happened. But
one expected that Denny Hastert might have left back last winter after the debacle of that election.
Exactly. And I think that there's another retirement that was announced.
Another big and significant retirement
more
here in Washington.
Yes.
In many ways, more significant. And that, of course, was Ray LaHood,
right. The
Republican congressman from the adjacent district around Peoria, Illinois, and Pekin, which, of course, was the home of
Everett Dirksen.
Yes, indeed. And Ray LaHood has decided to hang it up, even though he's a comparatively young man for a congressman. He had been previously staffed to Bob Michael, who was himself the Republican leader in the House back in the 1980s and into the 1990s. And Ray really learned the game the old-fashioned way, where you dealt with both parties, you played golf with people from both parties, you tried to get things done one way or another, and you didn't throw a lot of explosive improvised devices. You know, Ray LaHood, by the way, represents a part of Illinois that's very close to the part of Illinois around Springfield that Abraham Lincoln represented in Congress back in the 1850s.
That's right.
And we just learned this week, by the way, something interesting about Abraham Lincoln's face.
He's on the $5 bill?
No, his face. He was asymmetrical.
He didn't like Jews? Actually, that's not true because he was shot in the temple. Oh, God. I'm so sorry. David Green never would have made that joke.
So we're hitting the big ones here. We're hitting the big ones who said goodbye in the last week. I don't think, though, we can go without mentioning Phil Scooter Rizzuto, who died this week.
Phil Rizzuto, the former Yankee great, Yankee Hall of Famer and Yankee announcer.
And the Yankees are going to win the ball game. Holy cow!
Holy cow.
You know something, I mean...
Gives you chills even now, doesn't it, Dan?
It does, because as, you know, as the former chief of staff for Vice President Cheney, I think Scooter Rizzuto really played a significant role.
Tough year for Scooters.
It was. It absolutely was. I'm going to miss him. I mean, he was a character, and he wasn't ever indicted or convicted.
And a lot of heartfelt goodbyes. A lot of heartfelt goodbyes this week. Karl Rove resigned this week, too, didn't he?
Mr. President, the world's turned many times since our journey began. We've been at this a long time. It was over 14 years ago that you began your run for governor, and over 10 years ago that we started thinking and planning about a possible run for the presidency. And it's been an exhilarating and eventful time.
Karl Rove.
Karl Rove, the devil incarnate. And yet, you know, you talk about the divisiveness, the polarization.
Can I back you up just
sure.
a second? The devil incarnate. Some of our listener may believe that that is a rather negative character.
No, it's not coming from me. I'm saying there are some people who see him as such. They see him as emblematic of everything that's wrong in politics.
I was going to say 14 years, he said to the president, we've been at this. That goes back to when they began working together full-time towards George W. Bush's governorship bid in Texas.
Beating Ann Richards, which was not supposed to happen.
Not supposed to happen.
Defeating Al Gore in 2000, which was not supposed to happen. And actually, I kind of thought that John Kerry had a shot at winning in 2004. So even,
and also that Bush could have lost the nomination in 2000 to John McCain.
Right. And also, people forget about his feud with NPR's Wade Goodwin.
For example.
Do you know about the Roe versus Wade?
We had the Iowa straw poll while you were gone, Ken.
Thanks for waiting.
I know that you wanted to be there, but they just couldn't wait in Iowa.
Neither could Tommy Thompson.
Yes, well, we're going to get to Tommy, but okay. The big winner in Iowa was, of course, the man who finished first, Mitt Romney. He made an ad to thank Iowa for voting for him in the straw poll. Here's a little bit of that ad.
If there's ever been a time that we needed to see change in Washington, it's now. First of all, I want to...
Wait.
Change in Washington?
Wait, you mean get rid of the Democrats who are in power of the White House?
Maybe he means get rid of the Democrats who are in power in the House and Senate.
Or maybe if because of the Bush economic policies, we're only making change?
It is bizarre to hear anyone who wants to be the nominee of the incumbent president's party campaigning not only on change, but saying we need it more than we've ever needed it before.
Does it remind you of perhaps George H.W. Bush in 1988 talking about kinder and gentler?
Yes, kinder, but that was a variant. That was a variant. That was saying we want to stay with the direction that we've taken under our current president. We just want to make a little tinkering adjustment. Here we have somebody saying we need more change than we've ever needed before.
Yeah.
Thank you, Iowa, for giving me the chance to be that change.
Okay, now, as far as the
you see somebody else benefiting from the
Iowa let's go back. First of all, we have to mention the fact that John McCain, Fred Thompson, and Rudy Giuliani completely boycotted the Iowa straw poll.
They were on the ballot.
They were on the ballot,
but they didn't compete.
Right.
And so people booed their names when their names were read.
Right. And, of course, as Mitt Romney said, and probably justifiably, that if they thought they had a chance of winning, they may not have boycotted it. But having said that, 10,000 fewer Republicans turned out in this year's Ames straw poll than they did in 1999 when Bush won. And I kind of think there's a significant thing going on there, too, that the enthusiasm among the Republican base. Mitt Romney only got like 4,300 votes. I mean, we're talking about this great victory. And again, if it's the only game in town, it's, you know, you have to still quantify
it was
what
several,
it means.
Several thousand votes fewer than Bush got 8 years ago.
Right. But who finished in second place? Again, with a minuscule amount of votes. But the fact that Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, finished second, to me, is somebody that let's give him a second look. There was a big fight between him, his camp, and Sam Brownback, the Kansas senator, over social conservative voters. And even though it wasn't an astounding victory.
Well, Brownback was the third finisher.
He finished third. And the fact that, you know, sometimes second place is far better than third, even though a couple of hundred votes separated them.
There's another candidate who went to the Iowa straw poll, gave it his all, visited all 99 counties, spent 20 straight days going to 100 separate communities, telling them he was going to finish first or second in the straw poll, and in the end finished way out of the money.
Tommy Thompson, the former governor of Wisconsin.
Yes, a politician that I've known for more than 25 years. It's a little sad to watch somebody put it all on the line in such a completely unguarded way and just be completely shut out.
But, you know, there are a lot of people who say that, you know, the media should reduce the number of candidates who appear in these debates. We should winnow out the field. No, we should not do that. You know, people say, what is Ron Paul doing there? What is Duncan Hunter doing there? They'll make the decision what to do. But Tommy Thompson, as Jim Gilmore did earlier, he saw his lack of support in the Republican Party, certainly given all the time he spent in Iowa, didn't get the results he wanted, and he dropped out. We don't have to just, the elitist media don't have to be the people who say that these candidates, it's time for them to go.
Although
Duncan Hunter should go, though.
Although what we do need to do as the responsible media is we need to play this song each time a candidate for president does drop out.
So long, farewell, I'll be to say adieu.
Adieu, adieu, to you and you and you.
It was John Kerry, because he's French, isn't he?
Each time I hear that song, I think the field is too big, and we're going to have to listen to that song too many times.
But you know, with one Thompson leaving, we do have another Thompson arriving.
Ah, he's just been waiting for the Thompson lane to open. So we get Fred for Tommy.
A fair trade. And the wife.
September 5th? Do we believe in September 5th the way we once believed in 4th of July?
Well, we do, but the thing is, you wait any longer, you know, there probably was a time this summer where Fred Thompson could have come in and said, he is the second coming, he's the people who can get, he is the candidate who will excite the masses, the people who are not happy with the McCains, the Giulianis, and the Romneys of the world. And yet, this dance, this little tease, seems to be going on far longer than it should.
Isn't that because in part his campaign wasn't really ready for prime time and
well,
didn't want to get it on the road?
He raised certainly far less money in June than many analysts expected. And his campaign seems to be, you know, losing people. There's some questions about the influence of his wife in the campaign. I mean, I think he's running because he says he's running, or at least he intends to run. But somehow the magic of Fred Thompson seems diminished over time.
So as Mitt Romney has his ad up now in Iowa, we also have a brand new ad up in Iowa this week from Hillary Clinton, who has not been the leader in Iowa,
although
but
nationally
she's doing better in Iowa, even as she lengthens her lead, widens her lead in the national polls. Let's listen to a little bit of Hillary Clinton's ad. I think there's something of her new persona in this.
As I travel around America, I hear from so many people who feel like they're just invisible to their government.
Hillary Clinton has spent her life standing up for people others don't see.
You know, it sounds like she had a little imaginary friend when she was a little girl, and she was standing up for that little imaginary friend.
You know what hit me about this, Ed, is that given there's been a lot of interesting things going on inside the Democratic Party this week. This week on the front page of the Washington Post, there was an interview with Barack Obama who criticized Hillary Clinton for being a divider, less a uniter, more of a divider.
He would be more of a uniter.
That's right. There was a comment earlier this week by Elizabeth Edwards who called Obama holier than thou on Iraq. And yet Hillary Clinton seems to be above this Democratic fray.
And it's more positive than that, because in these debates, she's begun to find a stride and a tone we haven't heard from her in the past, and that I think is selling, at least in the context of these debates. And she's got some of it at the end of this ad we heard a little bit of earlier. And let's listen to that.
Americans from all walks of life across our country may be invisible to this president, but they're not invisible to me. And they won't be invisible to the next president of the United States.
What's interesting to me about this whole Hillary transformation is that the anti-war left of the Democratic Party really did not trust her for the longest time. They didn't like her 2002 vote, the fact that she wouldn't apologize for it, the fact that she still, as recently as 2004, 2005, was calling for more troops. She seems to be somehow inoculated from the wrath of the anti-war left, the hostility that you might see going to another candidate.
She may have survived that particular torpedo that was in the water for her the first 6 months of this year, but it's stronger than that. She's coming out with some new energy and a new sense of of mission, it sounds like, about her candidacy. None of the other candidates is moving in that direction as effectively.
It almost seems like every time there's another debate or another forum, we come out and say, okay, how did Hillary do? And we say, she was flawless. She just did everything she was supposed to do and then some.
Time for her to make a mistake, and she'll have a chance on Sunday when the Democrats meet again for their next debate in Des Moines. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. Good to have you back, Ken.
Glad to be back.